recording.
All right, everyone, thank you so much for being on the training call today. We are going to do a training call about the 10 Deal Commandments. And actually, before we start, let me do one thing. All right, sorry, we had some background noise there. So again, just to recap, we're going to do a training call today about the 10 Deal Commandments. These are for real estate investors, which is great for all of you because I know a lot of you on our team are real estate investors. So let's just kick it off. Number one, always make sure you're getting an accurate quote from a lender. And the way to do that is to use our intake forms. Those intake forms are gold. The questions that we ask when we are qualifying someone is everything that you need to discuss with the lender from day one about your file. And if you don't discuss all those things from day one on your file, you are setting yourself up for a disaster. And, you know, the crazy thing about this business is that it's not like lenders are trying to be shady or hide anything from you. It's just that everyone works on a commission basis. Everyone is on a crazy time crunch. Deals coming in, deals got to close. So you got to understand, when you're speaking to a loan rep at a lender, they don't have 45 minutes to spend with you to explain all of their underwriting criteria. They would never get anyone to move forward. They would never close a deal. So they just don't have the time to do that. So whenever you're presenting a deal to a lender, you always want to use one of our intake forms to do that. Again, whether you're going through us or not, if you're going to go direct to a lender, our intake forms that we have for permanent financing, rehab, ground-up construction, bridge financing, and blanket loans, even wholesale deals, that is the way to properly present your file to a lender. Please don't try to create the wheel or recreate the wheel. you don't have to do that. We've spent years designing these forms, and these are the things that lenders need to know from day one to tell you, yes, this deal is going to make it, or no, this deal isn't. On commercial deals, though, please be advised. Commercial 1-4 unit investment deals are very, very different. On 1-4 unit investment deals, the lenders can quote us right off of the intake forms. All they're really taking into consideration is the rental income, you know, monthly taxes, monthly insurance for a permanent loan. If it's a fix and flip, obviously the obvious numbers, purchase price, rehab, ARV, which stands for after repair value. But on commercial deals, there's no such thing as getting a true quote from a lender without submitting them documents. All commercial properties are different. A bowling alley is going to produce different income and going to have different expenses, obviously, than a self-storage facility. They're all different. There is no such thing as getting an actual true quote on a pure commercial property, meaning 5-plus units or, you know, any other commercial property, a strip center, retail spot, nothing unless you actually submit documents. And what you really need to send the lenders, you need to send them a year-to-date income expense report and the previous 2 years. Also, they're really going to want to see a personal financial statement or 1003 on you. Rent roll, obviously, if the property is rented out. And, you know, some type of proof of credit, something that you can grab online. Obviously, the lender's going to have to do their own credit check. And then, obviously, they would probably, you know, they really would like to see pictures of the property as well. But just please keep that in mind. You always have to submit income and expense reports when you're getting a true commercial quote from a lender. If a lender gives you a quote and you have not given them income expense reports, it's not accurate. It's not accurate. So, and if you're purchasing a pure commercial property, you need to make sure you have the income and expenses on the property so you can determine what is the purchase price I'm willing to offer. If I don't know the true profit on the property, how can you determine yourself what you're willing to buy the property for? Just because the realtor said so? You don't want to do that. You need to crunch the numbers yourself and figure out how much cash flow is this property actually generating, how much can I purchase it for, if I'm going to amortize the mortgage over 30 years, here's my payment every year, what makes sense? So that is rule number one. That's the most important rule. On to rule number two, which is kind of a piggyback off of rule number one, but know how to present your deal quickly to a lender, quickly and accurately. Again, that is using our intake forms that everyone in our internal team has. Actually, the whole world has because they're on our website. So everyone does have them. a lot of times what I see people doing, and they get very frustrated in this business, is they will keep sending just all kinds of crazy loan documents, you know, personal financial statement, you know, 1003, or they'll send you like a big long executive summary that's 20 pages long or something like that. And I've actually spent time going through those things, and half the information in there is not information we need. The lenders need to know the specifics of the deal and those questions on that intake form. They need to know the purchase price. How much money are you contributing towards the transaction? What is the income on the property? What is the expenses? They need to know stuff like that. You know, what's the current occupancy? You know, obviously they want to see a rent roll, but they need to know things like that. How many principals are involved in the company that's purchasing the property? What is everyone's FICO scores? Does anyone have any past credit issues? Those are things people need to see when they're trying to tell you very quickly, yes, we could do this or not. It's not a 20-page executive summary that talks about how awesome the property is and stuff. And I get that, and I think those things are great. But that does not help help a lender tell you very quickly if they can do the deal or not. So number two, know how to present your deal quickly, because keep in mind, this is a quick business. This is the money business. Money never stops, doesn't sleep. So if you want a real answer, you have to know how to present your deal quickly to a lender. Number three, don't lie about credit issues in your past. This will come back to get you. It will, and this happens from time and time. We ask the questions that we ask on our intake form about past credit issues, and the questions we ask on our intake form really encompass everything. We ask, you know, have you ever had any past bankruptcies, foreclosures, BKs? Are you in a pending or current lawsuit? These are all things that can kill deals that you need to know going in. And again, someone may not know to tell you these things going in. If you don't ask the question, they don't know to tell you. So we ask them, of course. You know, we also ask, have you had any mortgage rates? All different lenders have different underwriting criteria on mortgage rates, and can they be on the subject property? Can they not? How long ago can they be? So the way to get a deal closed is to really, really, really pay attention to lenders that you work with, all of their underwriting criteria, study up on that, and make sure you are properly qualifying your client and for yourself. If you're a real estate investor that is taking these bullet points into consideration, you know, you want to make sure that you are just disclosing all these things up front, because they will come back to get you. How to word this? Past home modifications, that's also something we ask on the credit questions on our intake forms. Those can become an issue too. A lot of people for some reason think in commercial lending we are just concerned about maybe mortgage rates. And when I say we, I mean lenders. Just concerned about maybe mortgage rates on the subject property, but it's not that. It's not that at all. It actually encompasses everything. It's not just the subject property, but you know, any commercial lender wants to know who are the guarantors or who are the sponsors behind the loan. Who are the people behind the company? You don't just go and get a commercial loan and no one ever finds out who's behind the company. At least one person in the company has to personally guarantee, and other lenders have different underwriting requirements where 20% have to personally guarantee. It's a different number with everyone. So these are just things you have to disclose up front. So we can make sure that we are properly placing your file, and also that you can make sure that you are placing your file with the lender that can actually get it done. Another thing that you want to disclose up front, besides credit issues, are any past felonies or financial crimes. Or you can just directly ask the lender, you know, do you run background checks? Some lenders we work with don't run background checks, so it's never going to come up. Some lenders we work with do. So that is something we do ask on our intake form. Have you ever been convicted of a felony? Because if you have, it's not a deal killer. It's just we have to go to a lender where that's not part of their underwriting criteria. Okay, number four, make sure you get the lender's title requirements and their insurance requirements right away. This says up front, but really, you know, right away, as soon as you're getting into the file with them, as soon as you pay for your appraisal, and submit them to your, you know, title representative, and then submit the insurance requirements to your insurance representative. you want to do this right away, and we do this when we're quarterbacking all of our files right away as well. And what I mean by right away is as soon as someone commits to a quote, they've signed a fee agreement with us, they've given us the preliminary documents we need to get the appraisal ordered. Some lenders, we order the appraisal on behalf of the lender. They allow us to do that. Other lenders we work with do not. They must order the appraisal, so obviously we're turning over those documents to them. But as soon as someone pays for that appraisal is when a deal becomes real. And when that happens, that's when we start quarterbacking, connecting with all their third parties for them. So, again, we're reaching out to title, insurance. If there's a lawyer involved, we're reaching out to a lawyer. If there's any other third parties we have to get involved, obviously we'll reach out to them. But those are your main third parties. And obviously if there's realtors involved, we reach out to the realtors as well to give them an update so they know what's going on with the financing, because obviously their deal is contingent on the financing going through. So just make sure you get them right away. You want to do that because with title insurance, you know, certain lenders want certain endorsements on policies. You need to make sure the title company you've picked is able to do that. And then with insurance requirements, you obviously need to make sure the insurance agent you've picked is able to provide that type of insurance. So really the only thing that comes up with insurance is a lot of the 1-4 unit investment property deals we do, some of the insurance agents are under the impression since 1-4 unit properties are I don't want to say classically, but people refer to them as residential properties. And that can be a little confusing and confuse people in commercial lending because we are doing them commercially. We're doing them as investment loans. We don't do loans for 1-4 unit owner-occupied properties. So you want to make sure that insurance agent can produce coverage for that property, and it has to close in the company's name. That's the biggest thing. Whenever I'm the processor or whoever's the processor, we always contact them, let them know the insurance must be in the entity name. Yes, I know this is a single family residence, but it is an investment loan. Coverage must be in the entity name. The loan is closing in the entity name. The title documents will be in the entity name. The appraisals in the entity. Everything is in the entity's name. It all matches up. So you want to do that right away because you don't want to have your insurance agent telling you the day before closing when they are due to give you your policy that they couldn't get it together, or, oh, I'm sorry, we don't do coverage in company names. We're not able to bind insurance like that. That's not a fun conversation to have. So, number 5, always get the lender's full document list up front so you know what's expected of you to close. This is a big one. Before you pay for an appraisal, you want to do this because you want to make sure you can provide all the things the lender needs. You know, most lenders, when they submit, you know, when they have a full funding list that they give us, none of the things are really an exception. None of the things are an exception, unless there's some reason they don't exist. Like, say the lender is asking for 2008 company tax returns, and you just formed the company in 2019, so it doesn't have tax returns because it wasn't in existence last year. Well, then, yeah, you don't have them. That obviously makes sense. But if they're asking for personal returns and they want them and you don't have them, that's going to cause a problem in underwriting. And the last thing you want to do, again, is put yourself in a position where you've paid for an appraisal. So now you're into the deal, or at least you have a little bit of vested interest in it. And now say your property came back and appraised. Everything's great. Everyone's getting on the same track, title, insurance, appraiser, you know, again, return the report, and you can't submit all the final documents to close. That's not a good situation to be in. So just so everyone's aware, this is part of what we do, quarterbacking a loan to a close. When someone tells us they're going to move forward, sign the fee agreement, we get them the full entire document list up front. Now, our document lists are always broken up into 2 sections. Here's what we need to get your appraisal ordered, and then here's everything needed to close. And you want to do that to keep the client on the right track. You got to always kind of be steering them, letting them know, just send me this first, send me everything later. Don't send me the later stuff now. I don't need that because what we need to do now is get the appraisal order. So get the full document list up front. Another tidbit I want to add is a lot of lenders that we work with do ask for tax returns, but it's not because they're underwriting off them. It's just because they want to make sure the borrower is filing and doesn't have a problem with the IRS at all. Technically, the IRS has first lien position on every single property in the United States. So if you're not filing taxes, they could put a position against that property, and the lender doesn't want to be second position. They want to be first. So if you're not sure, just ask us. Again, you can always ask loans processing. Just let us know. Just so you know, our document lists are very, very detailed here. A lot of times we'll even put on the document list, you know, 2 years tax returns is needed, but again, they will not be underwritten off of. The lender is not looking at your global or comparing all your income to your expenses. They just want to make sure you're filing with the IRS. That being said, though, if taxes is an issue, you don't have them, you're not filing them, whatever is going on in your life, that's okay. Just let us know. We work with a lot of lenders that don't even ask for taxes. So we just need to know. Someone can give us a, you know, a heads up on the intake form. That would be great. That would help the intake team, obviously, properly place the loan. Number six, get all your loan questions clarified before you pay for an appraisal. And I know I keep kind of harping on this, but you really, really want to do that. We're very, very extensive in the way we quote here, the way we go over quotes with our borrowers, clients. You know, we're now even enacting a new thing where the quote that we put on our company letterhead along with our intake form, because the quote is based off the intake form, and we even are having people sign it now that they understand it. But we do a very, very good job, I feel, of breaking quotes down and letting people know, here's your down money, here's what you need for title, insurance, which is always an estimate, broker fee, lender fee, which are exact fees, any underwriting fee or processing fee the lender has, we let people know. We're very upfront. But just get all your questions clarified up front because, again, I know this is a very, very rushed business. And that's kind of a scary thing if you think about it. Someone's making a financial transaction where they're putting their money towards an investment property that they want to produce money for their family and their business. But say the seller's only giving you 2 weeks to close, and you're making a financial decision that's going to affect, honestly, the rest of your life. So, you know, that's why mistakes are made in this business. Is because of situations like that, because people are just constantly in this rush in this business, and I get it, but, you know, if someone's giving you a quote, and I get you want to move forward very quickly because you have to, because the seller's, you know, telling you have to close right away, you have to get all your questions clarified because, again, you don't want to be in a situation where, again, you've already paid for an appraisal, you're submitting documents, you're doing all these things, and then you can't close or it doesn't work out. Appraisals, once an appraiser comes out to inspect the property, that money cannot be refunded. So that money is gone. And if, you know, residential appraisals are typically $500 to $800, maybe $500 to $900. It just depends where the property is located and how many units. You know, an SFR is obviously on the lower scale, which stands for single family residence. 2 unit, 3 unit, 4 unit, it starts to get a little bit more expensive. But commercial appraisals can be pretty costly. I mean, they really start at about $1,500, you know, just for a 5 unit. I mean, I've been involved in commercial deals where the commercial appraisal was $5,000. It was a very large mixed-use property. But that's a lot of money to be putting out for an appraisal, and you don't have all your questions answered. So number seven, set up your purchase and sales contract correctly. I wanted to put that in our training today because I see people go back and forth on transactions about this all the time. Now I'm not a real estate investor myself. I'm not a realtor. I actually was a realtor here a long time in Pennsylvania. Couldn't make any money in that business, so I jumped ship to financing. But there's ways that you can set up your purchase and sale agreement correctly. You know, there's usually always a financing contingency in the purchase and sales agreement. If you plan to actually get a loan, you have to mark that off. And I see people a lot of times saying they plan to buy the property cash, but obviously they're not because they're coming to us for a loan. And that can cause friction between the buyer and the seller. I mean, obviously us as the mortgage company, we have to contact the title company. So is the lender. They have to get the title policy from the title company. When the title company finds out that you're getting a mortgage, they're going to notify the seller. And if you told the seller you were entering into this contract all cash, the seller is going to be upset. Some sellers are very adamant that they want to deal with someone that can buy a property cash because they don't want to have to wait for the mortgage process because the mortgage process is a process. It is what it is. There's no such thing as an instant mortgage. You know, we're always waiting on the borrower to turn in documents from them. Obviously, they're the only ones that can turn them in. And then we're waiting on title to turn documents, insurance people, appraisers, sometimes environmentalists. sometimes surveyors. There's a lot of people sometimes involved in a real estate transaction. It is a process. So just set up your purchase and sales agreement correctly. Be upfront about how this transaction is really going to go down. And a little tidbit off the side as well is that, you know, I see we've kind of gotten involved in these discussions a couple weeks ago about wholesalers and setting up their transactions and stuff. And sometimes some people do think they need a wholesale loan, but if they're able to just assign the contract from party A, it's really from party A to C, they don't really need a wholesale loan. So there's a lot of great real estate classes out there that you can take. You could even become a licensed realtor if you want to learn how to set up your contract, but just make sure you're setting up your purchase and sales contract correctly, and make sure you're giving yourself time to close. And make sure that if you know it's going to take you time to submit certain documents, don't tell the seller that you can close in 14 days, because you're just going to put stress on yourself, you're going to put stress on your mortgage broker, and it's just going to be one big circle. So just give yourself time to close. Number 8 is reserves. And when I say reserves, that just means cash on hand you have to close. This is a big thing, and this is something we go over when we quote people. When we quote people on loans, we go over this with them extensively. You have to make sure you have enough cash on hand to close the deal. And most people understand, if it's a purchase transaction, that they need down money, that they need to pay a broker fee, that they need to pay the lender fee, that title insurance, there's a fee for that. They're going to need proof of property insurance, there's a fee for that. You know, obviously there's other stuff with title, with transfer and taxes and all that stuff that these amazing title people do and keep track of. So most people understand that. A lot of people, I feel, have seen a HUD-1 or settlement statement before. They understand that. That's just the basics. That's just to actually close, get the deal to a close, that money that you have to have on the bottom of the HUD that says this is what you need to bring to closing. Here's the thing, though. If the borrower doesn't have extra money on hand, most permanent rental lenders want to see really 3 to 6 months of mortgage payments on hand as additional reserves. Even if the property is 100% rented out, sometimes they want to see that. If it's a rehab deal, you have to have the money to close, but then you also have to have the money to start the construction. And the lender is going to have a reserve, aka cash on hand requirement, that they're going to require you have, or they're not, you'll never get to closing. You won't ever see a HUD-1 or a settlement statement. So just please, if you are going direct to a lender, if you're a real estate investor listening to this, please make sure, besides what someone has quoted you of what you need to bring to closing, please make sure they have actually let you know this is how much liquid cash you actually need to have on hand in order for the lender to schedule a closing for your deal to close. So that is a big one. Cash is king. I can always tell you that. The more cash someone has on hand, the more liquid cash you have in bank accounts that you can send in to your mortgage broker or lender. Even if you have a 401k or IRA, it's not liquid. But most lenders will still count 50% of that as liquid. Everyone's got their kind of different underwriting criteria on it, but 50% is the general rule. That is king. The lenders will start making exceptions for you if you have a lot of cash on hand. So reserves, big one. Number 9, this is a little off topic, but I have learned this over the years. Don't be blatantly rude to anyone in the transaction, especially not the lender. You know, I have been involved in transactions where borrowers have sent in crazy emails to not us, but have copied some of our lender contacts, and the lenders have literally emailed back, I'm sorry, we're not interested in this transaction. And we've gone so far down the road. I've been on kickoff calls with lenders and clients where, where everything's in. We just all want to have a call just so everyone understands the terms of the loan. And then at that point after the call, the borrower is going to wire in their deposit, which is going to go for the appraisal and any other third-party reports. And I've literally been on a call before where I guess this gentleman was just not in a good mood, but the lender was trying to get some clarification from him because they wanted to make sure that this issue got resolved up front so it wouldn't become an issue in underwriting. And he was just blatantly not answering the question. again, maybe he was in a bad mood that day, but they actually literally excused themselves from the call and said, I'm sorry, we're not interested in this file. You have to understand, lenders are lending their own money, or they may have raised money, and they're lending that money out, but they are responsible to make sure that money goes back. So if there's anything they need to know about you, it's not because someone's trying to pry into your life, but usually these prying questions are so they can make sure that nothing goes wrong in their underwriting department and with their underwriting criteria. You know, unless you're going to go through hundreds of pages of underwriting criteria yourself and determine if this loan is going to go through or not, you're going to have to answer the lender's questions. So just, you know, the way I've always gotten lenders to move forward throughout the years is obviously brokering both of these relationships between the borrower and the lender. But it's also to nicely, just continuously, I don't want to say nicely push, but in a way that kind of is, you know, nicely follow up with people, offer suggestions, offer solutions. Okay, well, this didn't work, but can we do it this way? Underwriting doesn't like that. Can we try it that way? Always ask for the exception, or ask for, hey, can this prove that for your underwriting criteria? Can we go about it a different way? Engage, you know, want to make the deal work. But I have never, ever, ever been blatantly rude to a lender, and I never would do that, because if you are like that as a broker or a borrower, good luck. They're not going to close your transaction. They're not going to be motivated to close your transaction. There's no rule in commercial lending that a lender has to lend to you. I'm sure there's some type of rule like that in residential lending, but we don't do residential loans here. We're kind of like the Wild Wild West. So if a lender is getting a bad vibe, or they just don't feel like the deal's panning out, or they feel like you're not being responsive, they're not getting documents from you, they can cancel your transaction anytime that they want. So just a tidbit, the way to get deals done is to work together as a team and to offer solutions. That's the way to get deals done. All right, number 10. This is a funny one, but this is so true. This happens to me every single day in this business, every single day. To really, really, really get a deal closed, whether you're a broker or a real estate investor quarterbacking your own deal, is you have to get everyone on the same page. You have to get, you know, obviously the lender, your title insurance representative, your insurance representative, and then, you know, at your insurance agent, you probably have your intake person, but you have a process, you have an underwriter there. Same thing as a title company. You have an intake person, you have a process, you have an underwriter there. Same thing at the lender. You even, besides the processor, you got a funder, and then you have a senior funder that you go through. So what I do is when a deal is getting close to a close and everyone's getting on the same page, we're getting the documents in, we're, you know, from that party, this party, that party, everything is coming together nicely. You have to get everyone on the same chain, and you have to reply to all. That is number 10, reply to all. Some people are just not sure how to do that. I'm not sure why, because the reply to all button is right next to the reply button on every single email system I've ever seen. But you have to reply to all. You have to keep everyone on the chain. Now, if someone doesn't want to be on the chain or doesn't need to be on the chain, obviously take them off. They don't want to get a million emails. I get it. I don't like getting a million emails during the day either, but I'm a processor, so that's what happens. So you want to get everyone on the same chain. And especially because what will start happening is the title company may start asking the insurance rep for something. Oh, I see your invoice wasn't dated the right invoice, and I need to add it to the HUD. Can you send me the right, correct invoice? You know, you need to make sure they're properly communicating, because what happens is a lot of times the title company will just respond to me that, oh, I need this. They didn't rope in the insurance agent. So then I reply back and rope in the insurance agent, which sometimes they're just taking them off. I'm not sure why. But you just got to, I know, I'm beating this to death. You've got to make sure everyone is on the same page on your deal at the very end, and that everyone comes together. And the biggest thing is once you get your stuff from the insurance agent, that's great. You can get them out of chain, because insurance agents don't really like to be copied on a million emails, and they don't need to be involved at that point after they've given you what you need. But you got to make sure from the title company you have the intake person, the processor, the underwriter. Sometimes there's a lawyer that is also representing the title company or works for the title company. They all have to be on the chain, and then everyone from the lender has to be on the chain too. You, if you're a broker, need to be on the chain. Obviously, if you're a borrower, you need to be on the chain. It's your deal. You need to know what's going on. Partners, you know, any partners you have involved in your transaction, everyone should be on that chain and just reply to all, keep everyone in the loop. So that is it. That is really our 10 deal commandments. Those are really my 10 best tips to get your transaction closed. You can see none of this stuff is overcomplicated. None of this had to do with any fancy math or numbers or anything like that. It is just, these are the 10 best ways, if you want to get a deal done, you want to get it done right, that you need to look out for. So let me just unmute, see if anyone has any questions. All right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone's unmuted. If you have any questions, go ahead.
Hi, it's Robert in New Jersey, and I have some questions.
Hey, Robert, good. I thought you were going to speak. I saw the little sound bar going up. So go ahead.
Awesome. Question. So I had a possible client filling out the sheer, by the way, I could listen to you forever. You know so much about things, it's so much about this business. It's so inspiring. So thank you. My question to you is that I belong to a lot of REI groups here in Northern New Jersey, which is fantastic. So there's pools of people who, you know, want to do commercial or doing somewhat commercial, but they want to do more. And so they always have a lot of questions for me. So when I get back, I have questions.
Go ahead.
Great. So, for example, the head of my REI group, his name's Jonathan Steingraber, he's got 2,000 members. He was asking me about if we do financing for vacant buildings. And I'm not sure I think he's doing a refinance for this building. But I remember somewhere in a lender call that one of the lenders said that they will refinance a vacant building, but I wasn't sure. So I thought I'd just quickly ask you.
Robert, that's a great question. And this is a little off topic, so I'm sorry to get off topic, but what happens...
I know, sorry about that.
No, not you. I mean me. I'm getting a little off topic. What I wanted to say to you is sometimes people will come to you with these questions, and the reason is because maybe they've gone to their bank and their bank has said no, but their bank hasn't actually explained to them why it's not a bank loan. And I don't know why banks do that, because you can probably tell here we're very, very big on education because that's how everyone grows and learns. But, so here's the thing. We, in commercial lending, if the property is not producing income, you can only go for a hard money loan. So we certainly have a lot of lenders that can provide hard money loans. Do you know the exact property type at all?
I believe it's a very large house that had been it's on a commercial street, so it was a very large house that had been cut up into a commercial property, and there were multiple offices and whatnot in it. And I don't know why he's looking to refinance an empty property, but I think he's looking to do, you know, he's an investor, so he's looking to do more commercial deals. And I think he was, looking to, he's probably looking to take the money out of his, you know, out of his, from his, just to do cashback refinance so he can probably put more money into the property. I'm not really sure, but the problem is he went online and he filled out the short form, and he for some reason, he kept only filling out the first three lines instead of doing the whole thing. So that's as far as I've gotten with him. So
this is again a little off topic, but I mean, I know you're probably busy, but if you have time, you could always do it for, you know, with him on the phone or use him.
I would love to do that. It's just that he doesn't have time. So, I'm trying to push, you know, to do something like that. But so my next question, so what you're saying is that so without tenants at all, it's not possible, correct?
No. Well,
we don't have lenders.
So here's the thing. That's why I asked you what the property type was. We have on the 1 to 4, there's this big difference for the 1 to 4 unit investment space than pure commercial properties. In 1 to 4 unit space, like if this is a single family residence, a 2-unit, 3-unit, 4-unit condo or townhome, as long as the property is actually fully rehabbed, so it's rent ready, you know, like everything has to be rehabbed, all of it. We do have lenders that can actually offer permanent financing loans on 1 to 4 unit investment properties only, and they will just go off the local market rent. So what happens is when they send the appraiser out to do the appraisal report, they add to the appraisal report that the appraisal needs a 1007, and that's just a section of the appraisal where the appraiser has to actually go compare the local market rent of like comps. You know, so if it's a 2-unit, the appraiser has to come out and determine, okay, well, the 2-unit across the street and down the street and over there is running out for this, and this is what this property is going to rent out for. And that's what the lender is going to use to do their debt service calculation to make sure the property cash flows. Now, again, the property is vacant, so it's not actually bringing in the income right now, you know, but the lender is just going to assume after the deal closes, this real estate investor is going to, you know, get it together, and they're going to get a tenant in there right away, and this is what they're going to be paying. So if it's a 1 to 4 unit investment property, and it's fully rehabbed, we can do a permanent loan for this gentleman. I think his name was John.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if it's a commercial property, if it's a pure commercial property, so again, anything 5+ units, or anything purely commercial, obviously a retail strip center. I think you mentioned office, but I'm not quite sure the property type. And there's a lot of crazy commercial properties, just so everyone's aware. Like, I've seen a lot of crazy commercial properties. But if this is considered pure commercial, and really the way to kind of get that from them is, how is the property zoned? Is it zoned residential or commercial? If it's zoned commercial, unfortunately, there's no such thing in commercial lending as commercial lenders going off the local market rent. That property has to basically be 100% leased out in order for a permanent financing lender to offer a permanent financing loan. It needs the debt service, typically at a 1.25. If it is a commercial property and it is not leased out, say it's vacant, we could still do it for him. But we have no choice but to send them in a hard money loan, because obviously the property is not producing income. So no permanent financing lender is going to put a 30-year amortized loan on something that can't prove it couldn't pay the mortgage, because it's not making any money, you know? So we can help them. I got 3 different options for John. We can put him in a permanent loan for 1 to 4 if it's fully rehabbed and it is a 1 to 4 in investment property. If it's a commercial property, and obviously we already know it's not income producing, then he has to go into a hard money loan, unfortunately. Once he gets it income producing and gets it more leased up, he really needs to really get it almost 100%, probably more like 90%. We can take him out into something permanent. But when something is not income producing, traditionally if someone's trying to refi cash out on it, they just have to go hard money, because hard money lenders will allow that. They will allow
it. Got it.
They are looking for value add situations where the real estate investor is going to do something in the future to make the property income producing.
Right. Got it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Perfect. That's exactly the answer I needed. Thank you. My next question is totally off topic again, but I really wanted to speak to you and hear your answers. Would you ever consider speaking at an REI event?
I actually have done that so much in the past, and I would love to do that. Robert, if you, any group you ever wanted me to speak at, I would love to do that. Just so you know, like when I got started in this business about 8 years ago, I really didn't know that much about lending. I mean, I knew the basics. I wasn't a mad closer like I am today and making sure all of our closing's happening. But I used to speak all the time in front of groups about lending. And as the years have gone on, I've done a lot of really, it's really just been conference calls. But I would love to even do I'm from the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area, so I would love to do some in-person conferences. But, yeah, I would love to do that for you or any of your groups or anybody on this team.
Yeah, because I belong to 2 groups. One of them is huge. One of them is like 2,500 members. And you could do just the presentation you made today would be enough. for one group, yes. You know, and
that was just one training call. We have hundreds of training calls. No, this is a great training call, but honestly, Robert, I could tailor it to whatever you guys want. Like, we do monthly deal talk calls where people just pitch deals at you and you tell them what you can do with them. I think that would be great to do with so many real estate investor groups nationwide, just so real estate investors understand what they qualify for. Because the more you understand what you qualify for in terms of financing, if that's the direction you're going, the more you can control your real estate transaction, the better decisions you can make. You know, if you know you're going to qualify for something, you know how much cash you have on hand, you have some more negotiating room. But I have so many different training calls that I could do. I would love to do that.
So you would do a training call or an in-person one?
Where are you from?
We're in this would be in northern New Jersey, so
if a group wanted to get together and I could come answer their lending questions or talk about lending, I would. You're not that far from me. Yeah, I would love to come physically.
Yeah, no, it would. I wouldn't waste your time at all. It's just that I get it. Time is everything. So, but I just was curious if you ever would, because that would be an awesome way to break into this group with, you know, there's a lot of members and they're so hungry for commercial knowledge.
I know. You know what's really crazy? You know what's really crazy too? A lot of real estate investors, and I've just learned this over the years, don't necessarily understand that 1-4 unit properties, as long as they don't plan to live there, they can get a commercial loan on it. You know, they can go stated, meaning they don't. Stated just means you don't have to submit tax returns if that's what they, because eventually you can have so many residential loans out there, but eventually you get maxed out on residential loans. You can only have so many. It doesn't matter who you are. You can only have so many residential loans. So what happens is these real estate investors get stuck and they need to get more loans on 1-4 investment properties that they have, but they're maxed out in the resi world. They have to switch to commercial and they're not sure how to make that leap. And that's what we do here. We do so many 1-4 unit investment property loans that are commercial loans. Our borrowers are closing in an entity name. But Robert, I'm gonna send you an email. I would love to set something up with you guys, whether it's in person or over the phone. I think that would be great. I would love to do that.
Great. Thank you. And I'll make it worth our while. So.
Yeah. Did you have any other questions at all?
You know, it's interesting because somebody, you know, people were looking and they're asking me, what does it mean about the lawyer states? And I said, well, really doesn't, it's just a technicality that we have to limit, that we have to put on our business card that lawyer states, we have to have the verbiage for the lawyer states. And people are looking at that, they're like, well, what does that really mean? I said, it really doesn't apply to you. That's the correct answer, right?
Do you mean the lawyer states or do you mean licensed states?
I'm sorry, licensed states, correct. Sorry, licensed states, yeah.
There's a couple of states, just so you know, throughout the country where in order to close a real estate transaction, you need to be represented by a lawyer. New York is one of them. Illinois is traditionally one of them, although I have been involved in a transaction there where someone was not using a lawyer. The license states, though, which is a little bit different, is in commercial, being a commercial mortgage broker is not a profession that requires licensing or even there's no mandated training either. So it's a little, I mean, it's good for someone that, you know, is trying to find something and break into something, and as long as you have a phone and a computer, you can do this from home. You can do this from anywhere, you know? So residential is a very, very heavy regulated. Being a residential mortgage broker is a very heavy regulated business. Commercial is not. Now, commercial, there are a few states, though, throughout the country that do require you have an NMLS license. Those are California, Arizona, Nevada, New York, New Jersey, North Carolina is kind of up and down, but that is one. Yep, yeah, Arizona. I should have said Arizona, California, Nevada, because those are the biggest licensed ones. Idaho, you have to be licensed to broker 1-4 unit deals there, even if it is closing in an LLC. I've actually personally called them myself to talk to the licensing department there. you can close pure commercial deals there with no license, though. I closed a chiropractor's office there a couple years ago in Oregon, and I called them to make sure I was not doing anything wrong, and they were like, nope, as long as it's a pure commercial property, you're good. You don't need any type of mortgage license. So most of the states, again, commercial lending is kind of like the Wild Wild West. You don't need any special license to be a commercial mortgage broker, which is great because you're not paying monthly or quarterly, you know, licensing fees to a board and then to another board. And, you know, that's what happens when you're in residential lending. And also, I mean, if you're a realtor in any state, you're probably familiar with these different boards that you have to pay stuff to. but that also could be a kind of a little bit of a scary thing that anyone can jump into business and that person is handling someone else's financial transaction, you know? And if they don't know what they're doing, and this is why a lot of people do have a bad taste for brokers in their mouth, is because they've got mixed up with a broker who told them they knew what they were doing and they didn't, and they lost a lot of money on their deal, mistakes were made. You know, and that's really why we put together this training program, because the only way you really learn this business is by doing it. And that's what our school revolves around. We do have a booklet with a lot of fancy vocab words and stuff, but you'll never hear me talking about any fancy vocab words in any of our trainings. That's not how you close deals. And we live in the day of Google and Alexa. If you don't know what something means, just Google it, you know?
Thank you very much. That's perfect. And I look forward to getting your email.
Of course. Those license states, you just have to we do hold special licenses in some of those states, just so you know. So it's just we have to be careful if any of our IEPs or teammates are in those states. If you're actually in one of those licensed states and you live in one of those states, you actually have to be licensed to go and originate. But the thing is, though, you can originate deals. Like, say I live in California and it's a licensed state and I want to close a deal in Pennsylvania. You don't have to be licensed to close a deal in Pennsylvania. So even if you do live in one of the licensed states,
I do. I do.
I know you do. And actually, I'm going to send you an email about this separately, just so you know.
Okay.
You can still close deals in other states. And New Jersey is one we're covered in, Robert, so you're good. But I'm going to send you an email about it, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it for everything.
Thank you so much for being on the call. All right. Does anyone else have any questions?
Yes, Megan. This is Norm from Indiana.
Hey, Norm.
Thanks for your presentation. Unfortunately, I was a couple of minutes late, and maybe you have said that already. Is there a transcript of your presentation available, like in bullet points? Or can I listen to this again? Because I couldn't write everything you said so quickly.
Sorry. I talk fast sometimes because I'm used to being so fast-paced in this business.
so valuable, so I really think it is dynamite to follow your script and do the loan process. So I would appreciate to have something in writing or produce it in writing.
Yeah, actually, I write out all my training calls, and that's what I just did. I just went through the bullet points. So I will send all the bullet points out to everyone, the whole team, by tonight. And then, Norm, just so you know, we record every training call. So this is being recorded, so it will be uploaded in the portal by tonight as well, the IAP portal, so you can listen to it. And then also, I'm starting to turn all of our core trainings into videos, and I happen to video this one, so we'll have a video eventually in the portal of it as well. So
beautiful. Thank you very much.
You'll have all the information. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Did you have any questions about the training or any loan questions I could answer for you?
Not at this point. I just want to focus on the process and loans. If I have the question, I will come with that later.
Okay.
At this point, okay. I just want to focus on this presentation.
Okay, I get it. And just to kind of piggyback off that, I just, you know, just for you, Norman, for everyone on the phone, you do not have to be an expert in this business to do this business. I don't want anyone to think that you have to go through all the core training to do this business. You don't. You just need to talk to someone who's in need of a commercial or an investment loan and get the intake information. on each one of our intake forms, it does explain, it explains what permanent financing is, explains what ground-up construction financing is, rehab or bridge. So there's definitions on there that we send out every Monday. But just to throw it out there, guys, please, if you don't have time to listen to the trainings, don't worry about it. It's okay. You can still do this business.
Okay, then I had one question.
There is a
lady who is getting divorced, and they have a farm with 18 acres or something, but they have two large houses on there that can be rented out, and there's a third house where she wants to live. So is it possible to inspire somebody to buy it and then lease it back to her on a lease-to-buy basis? Is that financeable through us, or is it too much of a twist?
So farms are always complicated properties, just so you know, because they have this commercial component if the farm is actually a working farm and they're making money off the animals and the farm and the agriculture. So there is this commercial component to it. But also a lot of people live on their farms. I actually lived on a farm for a little bit when I was younger. So, you know, if someone's actually living in that house that owns the farm, you know, that's technically a residential loan.
Yeah.
So since your borrowers seem to live on this farm, that is really a residential loan. I have found, just so you know, commercial lenders in the past that are willing to lend on farms, but they're typically like hard money lenders, and she's not looking for a hard money loan. I would really advise her, honestly, to approach her local bank or maybe even try like a USDA loan, which is maybe her farm would qualify for. She wants to try to get this is there a reason she can't go residential?
Well, she didn't work for a while she was married. Now with the divorce, that gets her into trouble. Yeah. And it's not a farming farm, it's a horse farm. So they just have horse stables and an area to train the horses. So it's not really a chicken farm or something like that.
Okay.
But that's what I told her. I said, as soon as you live there, it's not non-owner-occupied any longer, and that is difficult for us to walk the street, you know?
Those are hard, yeah. I would stay away from farms if I were you. I've tried to work on a lot of them in the past, and I've never been able to successfully get one done. I really think she needs to try to go to a residential lender or a USDA lender. Or even you could tell her what she could do. Scotsman Guide. I don't know if you've ever heard of Scotsman Guide, but it's a great mortgage publication. I can send it out tonight to everyone as well. I'll include it in my notes that I promised everyone. Scotsman Guide creates a residential publication every month and a commercial publication, and there are hundreds of lenders that advertise in there. A lot of lenders we work with advertise in there. She wants to look in the residential publication and see if there's maybe, I don't know if there's such a thing as a no-doc residential farm loan or there's probably some kind of subprime resi loan she could go for. So I'll get that over to you. And even though we probably can't help her, at least you gave her some information and, you know, you never know. Maybe she'll just refer you someone in the future.
Yeah, my thinking was like if I buy the farm and lease it back to her on a lease-to-buy basis, can that be financed? Because I'm just an investor. I buy a farm and then lease it to somebody.
Yeah, you're right. Because it is an investment property. You could technically do that. It's just a lot of the commercial lenders that we work with, farms are specifically like a property they do not finance. It's a very hard property type to get financed in commercial lending. And another problem too is that a lot of the, like, say rental lenders we work with, they have a maximum amount of acreage that they'll lend on. And I'm assuming the farm is probably on some acres. Once you start
18,
getting over
18 acres.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry, you told me that. Once you start getting over 2 acres, sometimes lenders start getting a little commercial lenders start getting a little. But you know what you want to really do, Norm? Honestly, if that's your if that's something you're considering doing, buying it and leasing it back to her, first of all, it is an investment property. You, because it is such a unique property, you really want to try to approach a local, like a smaller community bank. That's your best bet in a lender that's going to do this. Someone that understands the area, understands the climate. Obviously, banks always offer the best interest rates, and that's really going to be your best way to go about it. But I'm sure on Scottsdale Guide, we can probably find you some farm lenders, and I will get that link out to everyone as well if you want to research it.
Okay. Appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Does anyone else? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you for being on. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello, my name is... My name is Ola. I'm Adejeji. I'm from Florida. I want to let you know that you very, very powerful information you gave. It's like you read my mind. Thank you so much. Thank you. Is there any way that I can get the links to get the tips to get your transactions closed? Is there any links that I can get all those information that you said?
What do you mean by that? Like, are you talking about one of our intake forms?
Yes, you know, like, you know, the get all your loans before paying for the appraisal, the fees, how you can do the purchase sales contract, and making sure that you reply to all those tips that you said. They were very powerful. Is there any way to get the, link to them?
I'm gonna send them out tonight to everyone on the team.
Okay.
I'm gonna all the bullet points, just so you know, all the bullet points we went over on this call. I'm gonna send all the. They're already written out, just so you know. Everyone will get a copy of all the bullet points, and I'll make sure this training that we did today. We're recording it right now, just so you know. Right as soon as you get off, I'll upload it into the IT portal, and you guys can access it right away.
Okay, thank you so much, because you did a very good job. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, is there any loan questions or anything I can answer for you, Ola?
Well, I know going through this, once I get through that, there are some questions that I will, but not right now, because I got it very well, the way you expressed it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I think we had another gentleman that was trying to ask a question.
Yeah, hi, Megan. This is Massimo. I just got to the call late because I was making some lead calls. But I heard you talking to a gentleman that he lives in one of those states that is not, you know, that you need to be licensed, which is my case in Arizona. Can you also send me...
Yeah, we have you
can
covered
you
in Arizona.
Can you also send me that email?
Sorry, go ahead. Arizona we have covered. So the other gentleman was from New Jersey. We're covered there. We have Arizona covered as well. So you're good. But did you have any specific questions about licensing? Yeah.
No, you said you were going to send him an email with some information about it. So I don't know if you can send me also the email for the information for me for my state, just to know what to do and what not to do. I mean, I've been talking to people anyway, so you know, hopefully I won't get in trouble. But I know I have to go through a broker.
You're fine. We're covered in Arizona. Can you just give me your email real quick?
Sure. So it's. Ready?
Yep.
It's M. Circana. Circana is SIRCANA at 11capitalfinance.com.
Okay. Got it. I'll get you over the Arizona stuff as well. So don't worry about that. Do you have any loan questions or anything else about the training I could answer for you?
Well, the training, like I said, I think I heard this training before on the portal, but I couldn't make it on time because I was making calls. So, but I'll listen to it when you send it tonight, and then if we have any questions, I'll send an email.
Okay. All right. Sounds great. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. I did do it before. I just wanted to redo it because the first time I did it, it was kind of like cut off a little bit and the recording wasn't that great in the portal. So I wanted to redo it. So thank you so much for being on the call. Does anyone at all have any questions at all about the training or loans or anything I can answer for you? All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for spending an hour with me. I appreciate it. Like I promised everyone, I will get you all these bullet points by tonight. It will be in the portal. And we're also going to start turning some of our core trainings into videos as well. So if you're a video person, you can watch the video then. Again, thank you, guys. Everyone, have a great day.
You too.
So much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.